There was a creeping sense of this feels familiar during Reading FC's championship match with Preston on Saturday, not only as Royals fans were able to return home for a Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff for the first time in almost 18 months, but as the team threatened to throw away a dominant performance that seemingly earned 3 points. Thankfully, John Swift popped up to add to youngster Femi Azizi's goal, and the Berkshire faithful were sent home happy. Welcome to episode 268 of the Tarlhurst End podcast, by Reading fans. For Reading fans, I'm your host, Mark Mayer, and joining me to discuss the Royals getting off the mark and their swift response to do that, it is Ben Thomas. Ben, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, yeah. It was cracking to get back to to the stadium and kind of sense normality, really. And great result. Sun was shining, people singing. So, all in all, very, very positive day all around.
Yeah, one of the moments that made me feel just how lucky I was sat in the northeast stand on Saturday was when I realised I was sat there in just a T-shirt and sunglasses, and it was feeling so, yeah, it's a really nice day, as you say. And I kind of thought, there aren't many times I'll be able to do that this season. It's going to be, it tends to be a case of a wrap up warm for the football games. But yeah, you say it, there was a lot to enjoy about the day itself, wasn't there?
Yeah, definitely. A bit concerned you're only wearing sunglasses and a T-shirt. Did you have to
that's the beauty of the sitting down. You don't have to. Actually, it's the beauty of being at the stand as well.
I think the whole thing really, just seeing people back and we've talked a lot about it not just being about the football. It's kind of how people use it as a social outlet, and for a lot of people, a lot of their kind of communication is through football and going to games. So it felt, from my point of view, it felt slightly strange to be able to write the column having gone to the game. Obviously, I went to a couple in December, which wasn't really the same thing. But it was just good to see people out, new shirts on, and just having a good time, really. And I think that's what people need, and this will sort of hopefully get people to reconnect with the club and vice versa, and having people back in the stadiums is huge, really. So long may that continue at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. A nice bit of quality time, isn't it, with the loved ones. And speaking of loved ones, as always, our Patreon subscribers, big shout out and thank you to those, and our sponsors, ZCZ Films. Hopefully we've got a couple of things in the pipe work that will hopefully improve our presence, let's say, that hopefully will be bringing out in the next couple of weeks as a result of these sort of helpings along the way, because I certainly wouldn't be able to afford these things out of my own back pocket, unless anyone's better at Super Six than I am. But alas, let's go then into the recap and talk about Reading's 2-1 win against Preston.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, going into this game, Reading had actually only won one of their last 12 league games, which just shows that Stoke defeat, and also the Swansea game, which we'll come on to in a bit, although that not being league, it wasn't necessarily a great spell of form for Reading as we came into it. But, it all is the season break in between and Reading come into this game, it certainly has a sense of a new, the new perspective on it, Ben. And Reading coming into it as well with three at the back, which was a bit of a change. It was kind of, would you say it was a proper three at the back? It was a little bit of a hybrid, wasn't it, with Bristow pulling back this time. McIntyre was definitely the left back for the Stoke game, a bit more the left centre back this time round, though. How did you find the formation change as Reading came into this?
Well, I think, we know from previous games of Preston that they're quite physical. And I was quite surprised at how unphysical they were yesterday, really. They didn't really show an awful lot kind of up front and from an attacking point of view. I think in terms of the back three, he's going to need to rely on those players moving forward. And I think the biggest thing, regardless of the formation, is the versatility of Tom McIntyre, because we've said it before and we've said it again, but he's able to play all across the back, really. And he's going to have to this season if we can't get any more people in. But also he can play in that pivot, as we know, in terms of central midfield. So I thought he was very, very underrated yesterday in terms of the ratings and people talking about him on social media. Very, very accomplished. Very solid across that back three. And probably out of the three of them there, was probably looking the most confident and the most comfortable on the ball when he had possession. So you know, the point is at the moment, he, you know, Pavlovic is very tied with what he can do formation wise, because as we all know, we don't have the strength and depth. So to have those three and then allow kind of Yeardom and Bristow, who again I thought was outstanding yesterday, really, really good, you know, talent going forward and attacking, it allowed those two to kind of push Preston back further into their own half. So I think in that particular game, the three worked really well. I'm not sure how it would work kind of moving forward with some of the teams that like to attack a bit more. I think he's going to have to be a little bit more reserved, but it's good to see him kind of, you know, deploy the wing backs and kind of have the emphasis on us attacking rather than teams attacking us. So from a formational point of view, freed up the midfield and we created a lot of chances, certainly in the first half. Second half, you know, again, very good moving forward. I know we're going to talk about Aziz in a little bit more detail in a minute, but across the board, you know, the players were very, very controlled in what they were doing. And apart from the fact that they got it to 1-1, which I thought was a really, really harsh penalty, we didn't really look like losing the game. You know, there was a lot of composure, a lot of resilience. And as you said, you know, we hadn't won in 12. And that kind of season form from last season does count for something, because it's the bulk of those players that have carried that burden. So very, very pleased all in all to get the 3 points and, you know, to move forward to Tuesday, which again is another home game and an opportunity for these young players to bed in further, really.
Yeah, well, I would say McIntyre wasn't entirely convincing for me. And there were a couple of things in the Stoke game that I feel like he'd kind of missed out on. But I'm willing to, you know, after two games, I'm willing to focus on the players that are the positives and let those who maybe haven't started, at least in my opinion, give them a bit more time to get back into it, especially as you know, moving between positions as McIntyre has. Lucas Schau started pretty well in this game, I felt. Set up a kind of the first chance, basically, kind of two tackles, really good tackles, must be said, for Preston players, stopping Swift from scoring. And then Bristow, he could have been the man with the famous home debut goal, as he had a shot blocked. Then the goal, Josh Laurent, then let's talk about that. One possession, brought it out on his left foot, really good ball in as well. Keeper and the defence all at sea. And Aziz with the finish, which it obviously it did have a bit of a helping hand from the defence, but great for him. And let's talk about Josh Laurent actually first, because I felt like there are two players that really showed themselves to be a step above in this game. The first of which was Josh Laurent, four tackles. He gained possession 10 times. That's the most of any player on the pitch. What is it that Josh Laurent had in this game for you?
The energy. You know, he just didn't stop. It's very rare that you see him and Runamota, to be honest with you, you know, stopping in the game and walking. He's just, his energy in his box to box is absolutely fantastic. But I think what he's added onto his game, and he's had to in the absence of you know, Ajari and Elise and obviously Mate as well, who's injured, a little bit more creativity now. He's getting a lot more forward than he had sort of towards the end of last year. He had that kind of burst at the start of last season where he was, you know, getting, popping up with assists and, you know, obviously scoring goals. The game against Blackburn sticks out for me because that was probably his best performance in a Reading shirt so far, the Blackburn away game last year. But, you know, yesterday he was just all over the pitch, supporting players, you know, giving pats on the back, encouragement. And I kind of looked and thought, you know, hold on, we could add this guy to the kind of the captain's union, really, because that's what we need and that's what we've been lacking all the way through, you know, sort of the last 3-4 years, in leaders on the pitch. And he could step up to that this year. He really could. His energy was excellent. The balls that he was trying to play were absolutely fantastic, you know, and kind of getting and putting pressure onto the Preston players, which is what we needed to do in that game yesterday. And he, along with Swift, as obviously said, was just phenomenal. So
yeah, you know, preempted my second player there. It's a very good guess that you've got.
Okay, well, there you go. My second then, player. Yeah, I mean, you know, Swift, again, he started the season brilliantly well. I said in pre-season, I think it's all to do with his haircut, you know, because he's looking sharper in a lot of respect. He's looking fit. He's moving well. He's putting those balls in the box. And obviously, he's got 2-2 now. So he really is kind of becoming the real deal. And I'm just hoping that we get to the end of August and the window slams shut and we've still got both of those players, you know, in our team, because regardless of the financial situation, it's going to be very, very difficult to find players that are going to be able to, you know, fill in the quality that they bring to the team and the squad.
Yeah, that is the question. Actually, one of the Tarlest and Facebook chat was dominated by after the game was, can you know, what do you do if a £4 million bid lands for John Swift in the next few weeks and everything? And I think that, you know, to finish up on Laurent, I think that you're absolutely right that he's added that extra element to his game in the final third and around the area. Quite often last season, you'd see him get into those positions, like he got into for the first goal on Saturday, not really know what to do with it. But this time, he just took the simple option, just get it in the box, do something with it. John Swift, you know, I think his start to the season has been everything we've dreamed about, really. No one's really been sat here, or I've not noticed anyone said, where's Michael Olise? We're missing him so much, because Swift, I think he's a better player than Michael Olise. And obviously in the future, in 5 years' time, you'd probably expect that to be swapping over. Olise's potential is pretty big. But I think today, John Swift is the better player. And 2 goals and 2 assists now matches his goal involvements for all of last season when he only made 14 appearances. So to get that, if he only made 14 appearances last season, to get that up to 35 or 40 this year, you've got to think that Reading are going to make some real, you know, there's going to be some really good stuff coming out of that. He just has the all-round game. The creativity was so high on Saturday. And let's talk just briefly then, in a short sentence, do you think that we'll have them both by the end of the window? Because that is the difficulty. But supposedly they're both out of contract at the end of the season. You know, it feels a little bit like me to play in Football Manager to say, oh, would you take 5 million, 6 million? It might not even matter as to whether we can get a replacement in. In the embargo, we don't really know what would happen with that if we sold them both for, let's say, £12 million. But do you think we will actually have them both at the end? Because if I was a Premier League team, you know, a Burnley or a Palace or whatever, or even someone like Fulham who might be able to tempt us in with a £10 million bid to a rival, do you sell him or do you think that they'll be here at the end of the window?
I think the difficulty with the club, and I said it a couple of weeks ago, is that we don't know. We know that obviously they're strapped for cash, but we don't know how desperately they need that cash. And I think they will have to weigh that up, hopefully with the coaching staff as well, in terms of if we took 5 million, have we got enough time to bring someone else in and invest at least sort of 2 or 3 million back in the squad? Probably not. So I think at this stage, because of the influence that particularly Swift has had over the last 2 games, I really think they will resist such bids. And they definitely won't want to shift him to another Championship team, because they do that and they're really going to have some questions to answer. Premier League, you could probably just about stomach it. But at the moment, you have to say that we would really struggle to fill the position if he goes. I think, you know, with the pressure that he's putting on those kind of opposing players, it's really, really important that we keep hold of him, because, you know, we've scored 4 goals this season in 2 games and a striker hasn't been on the score sheet. So for me, that's kind of his worth right now. He's almost doubling up, chucking the assist as well. And we're looking at the moment at the most complete midfield play we've had for a long, long time. So it's very, very difficult. And I just hope that there's no kind of real sensible bids that make the club turn around and go, oh, actually, that's quite an attractive bid. Same with Laurent as well. We're not going to be able to replace his quality. And I'm just hoping that we're able to resist as much as we can, because if he carries on like this, we may get even more for him moving forward.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I think that for me, I think you do hold out for a really good deal at the moment, because ultimately, if the EFL can't say we can't bring in a replacement, or if we fail to bring in a replacement, then you take Laurent and Swift out of this team. Yeah, you might have £12 million, but you might go down. So it's not worth it now. If it gets to January and there's no way they're signing new contracts and Reading are safe, and you know, it's a bit of a cut price deal, but you take a couple million for each player, maybe that is the best thing to do, because ultimately losing them on a free and keeping them for the final 6 months of the season just to finish, you know, 12th or whatever, then I don't think that's the scenario that you want to be in. But ultimately, that's something we have to come to. But I think we agreed that at the moment you have to be very clear that these are two of the best players at the club, or probably the two best players at the club, and we won't let them go lightly. Let's cover off the second goal then. We'll get to Preston's kind of comeback in a little bit. But we had loads of chances to make it 2-0. Swift laid on, Jao hit the post. Aziz had a couple one-on-ones missed. John Swift ultimately got the second goal. And after that, Aziz had a chance to break away and make it 3-1. But, you know, he had loads of options and shot over. Probably, I was thinking, actually, in reality, he's probably never been in that situation in his life. He definitely hasn't been in that situation in his life where he goes to run 70 yards down a football pitch with 13,000 fans on his back, and he has all these options, and he's 75 minutes into the game. He's absolutely knackered. He's never been in that situation before. So that he doesn't make the perfect decision is probably not that much of a surprise. But Reading, you know, with the Swift goal as well, which is really well worked with Laurent and Zhao was, and getting involved in that. Reading's attacking moves looked really good, and that's certainly something that's four goals now after two league games. I think that's hopefully, at the very least, whether we win, you know, all of our games or draw them or whatever, it's actually quite nice to feel that it could be entertaining watching this team this season.
Yeah, I mean, the second goal was like liquid football, really. It was absolutely brilliant. The fact that there were so many players involved in that, and the passes were precision, and the ball obviously ended up going off the one post and potentially off the other one as well. Just a really, really good finish, really solid finish. And I think, you know, moving forward, that's something that we're going to have to utilise, because, you know, that starting 11 can compete with any 11 in the Championship. That's not the problem. Our problem has always been what's behind it. In terms of the goal itself and the execution, I mean, the passing was absolutely fantastic. You know, really crisp moving the ball in terms of those transitions. And it was well deserved at that point. You know, it really was. And I'm really pleased that Swift managed to get the goal, because he up until that point, he had a complete performance. I think as well, what we're seeing with Zhao is, you know, we'll see, mentioned him in the build-up, and he was involved in the goal, is that for me, he's not moving quite right at the moment. He's kind of almost holding back and being quite reserved in terms of how he's moving. Obviously, he's injured now. We're led to believe it's a groin injury. So you're looking at minimum 3-4 weeks for that. If that's not the case, then brilliant. But you kind of have to wonder how he's going to come back from this latest setback as well. In terms of his age, you know, I think actually he was better for the kind of mistakes that he did make in the game, because there was a lot of times when he kind of probably could have laid the ball off. It was kind of a moment in the second half when Yeardom had obviously run, you know, 50, 60 yards and gave him an absolute rollicking because he didn't pass the ball. And that's good for him. That's what he needs to be able to kind of grow. You know, young player, learning his trade a little bit, really good poacher's goal for the first goal, but he has to be able to learn from these experiences and move forward. And I think ultimately, with those forward players that we had in those positions, they were very, very good and deserved all the plaudits that they got after the game, definitely.
Yeah, what a moment as well for Aziz to get that goal. We've had a few, you know, big debutant or big academy goals. I remember Jake Taylor scoring against Ipswich back in a few years of one of his first starts. And Jordan Abita, actually, it wasn't a debutant goal, but it was a goal after a long injury layoff that he scored a couple seasons ago. And these moments, you know, it's really important for the club to kind of build on them. And Aziz, I think, yes, we'll talk about Obi Ajayi. There's a question about Obi Ajayi in the mailbag. But for now, with that goal, you'd think that he's probably cemented his place in the team for 3-4 weeks. And he's just got something to build off now. And he's got that first goal out of his system almost. And now as he said, we'll hear from him in a bit, there is things that he can improve on. But we know exactly what those things are at the moment. And he knows what they are. And there's a lot of clarity with his position at the moment, which is really good as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think he looked very, very bright, and he was hovering around. And, you know, sort of as we lined up, or as they lined up, they were sort of looking at him on the right-hand side. But he was playing more like a false nine, really. He was very, very high up the pitch, kind of backing off from Zhao as well. So, you know, I think he was helped a lot by Zhao's kind of hold-up play. I thought Zhao's, you know, the way that he did that yesterday was excellent. But bringing players into the game, is what we said about him last season, was fantastic. But I think Aziz will learn from these players, these kind of experienced professionals, and they'll be able to move him forward. And I think, you know, he's got a good grounding here, and it won't be long, without being disrespectful to Elise, before we actually talk about, you know, him not kind of being missed at all. I know you mentioned it earlier, but with Aziz, potentially got a ready-made replacement. Looked like Bristow in a way. I thought Bristow was excellent yesterday, you know, the way that he moved forward. So, you know, there was a lot of panic pre-season about, you know, losing those two players, but actually we're two games in and both of those young players have stood up to the test so far, and long may that continue, because again, they could have potentially very, very strong careers with us, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, let's talk about the kind of, I suppose, the final bits of the game, but also the Preston equaliser. It was a handball, I think. Well, I know it was a handball. I think you disagree with me on this, but I'm pretty sure it was a handball. And it was one of those things that even if the referee didn't quite see it, having fans back in the stadium, if he would have disagreed with those Preston fans, I think they had about 250 pitch invaders because they were pretty clear it was a handball as well.
Yeah, I mean, from where I was at, it looked like it was a kind of an unnatural position. So it looked like as he was coming across, the ball just hit him. I mean, it is obviously a handball, but it's very, very difficult in those situations. Normally the ref will give it, but from a fan who's just had that done to them, I was a bit like, there's nothing he can do to get out of that, really. To book him as well, I thought was a little bit harsh. But, you know, it is what it is. I think you're right about the Preston fans. They put a lot of pressure. I think had it been down, you know, the Dolan, which as we all know is a hotbed for, you know, for pressure on referees and things like that, it probably wouldn't have been given. But, you know, the main thing was the resilience and the positivity from the players. The fans, I thought, were very, very good because there were times last season where we went, you know, either behind or got paired back and there was a little bit of nervousness. Didn't feel that yesterday from the stands and it was just encouragement all the way. And I think, you know, that helped the players to get back to 2-1. So all in all, it didn't matter. But from my point of view, it was disappointing to concede in that way, definitely.
Yeah. How were the nerves for you towards the end? Because it felt like the referee, I think everyone will agree from Reading's point of view, didn't have a very good game. Preston, ironically, the only time they didn't get a foul for falling over unnecessarily was before the second goal, which I know Preston were annoyed about. But I mean, I've watched it back and must admit that it's kind of hard to say fully whether it was a foul or not on the highlights. But having sat there at the stadium, I was pleased that finally they didn't get a foul for just falling over. But ultimately, for the last, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, is a long injury time. It was one of the longest 5 minutes of my life, so I know that. And Reading, it did kind of leave me a little bit disappointed because Reading should have seen this game out so much easier than they did. They should have been able to go 2-0 up. And I know, you know, handballs and everything like that, these things happen and you've got to just get the points. So certainly at this stage of the season, you just want to get that first win on the board. But how are you feeling? The lack of subs was a little bit worrying for me. With a game on Tuesday, probably wanted to save the legs a little bit, maybe get the debutant on Deli Bashiru, and, you know, Puskas came on for Zhao when he was injured, but it was a little bit too nervy for me. And I think that's something that Reading are going to have to look at in terms of keeping the ball and making sure that, you know, they don't give away fouls and that kind of long balls into the box are not as, well, they weren't particularly successful for Preston, but if we play a better team, there is a danger that they would be a bit more successful.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I kind of felt like we had enough to see out of the game. I do agree with you, though. I think we made heavy weather of it. And I think in terms of, you know, moving forward those games, the game management does need to be better in kind of the closing stages. Obviously, it was a great save by Raphael kind of close to the end just to push it away. And I think they had another chance to flash wide. But, you know, they were, Preston were kicking on and they were pushing in that injury time kind of slot. I would have liked to have left kind of feeling a little bit less stressed, but the nerves were there, definitely. I agree with you. And I think one of the things that they need to do really is to just sharp shop a little bit more and not leave themselves as open, because I think Preston had far too many opportunities in the closing stages, which could have resulted in obviously them, conceding and getting back to 2-2. So, you know, managed to get out, good celebrations at the end. And I think that will be a big confidence boost for all the players involved, and obviously the manager to kind of not get it off his back. But, you know, we mentioned about the form and it hasn't been good. And losing the first two games of the season probably wasn't ideal. But this is a good stepping stone, and we'll talk about it later on. But with the two games we've got coming up, you know, we've got really big potential to kind of get sort of 6 points on the board by the end of this week. So, yeah, really, really pleased with it. You know, looking forward to the next game and seeing what we can go on to do this season.
Yeah, big fan of Pavlovic coming out at the end and giving a round of applause for his first full house league game. And, yeah, I think it's... you know, it's just one of those things. We certainly won't be talking about at the end of the season, the kind of nervy 5 minutes we had against Preston. So as long as we get the win, that matters. Quick, let's tick off then. The game that was in midweek was the Swansea City Carabao Cup game. Ended 3-0 to the Swans. Reading, just, I mean, it would be rude of me to say that we didn't try, because, you know, the academy players that came in really put in, you know, a strong performance for themselves and really did give it everything. But ultimately, Reading didn't put out a competitive team, really, for a Swansea team. It was made up of senior players and everything like that. And it's disappointing, so I guess, to fall into the result we did. But in reality, the Carabao Cup, I mean, it's just not, it's not that important, or it's not important at all to us this year, is it?
No, and I don't think the timing of the games helps anyone at this stage, really, because, you know, I think, as you said a couple of weeks ago, Mark, is like a pre-season friendly. And I was surprised that Swansea put out, you know, players like Bango, and I think Grimes played as well, didn't he? So I was surprised they kind of went for quite a not a full strength, but a lot stronger than we had. From our point of view, I think it was, regardless of the loss, I think it was a useful exercise for those young players to play in kind of meaningful competition. I'm not saying that the under-23s are not meaningful competition. That's not what I'm saying. But in terms of having sort of 3,000 or 4,000 fans in the ground, that was a good experience for them. And I, you know, moving forward, they will remember that regardless of the loss. I think it was good to see Holmes being captain. I think that's positive for him in terms of his development. So there were positives to take out of it, but it kind of felt like everyone connected to the club had, and I might be doing the players that played a disservice, but it just felt like we'd lost before we'd even played. You know, the reaction to the draw wasn't positive from the fan base, and we knew that there was no way that anyone involved on the Saturday game against State would be involved in midweek, so because of the limitations on the squad. But those players will kind of look back on it as a big learning curve, and the only way that these young players will get experience is by, you know, playing games in front of fans and knowing what it means to play in the first team, basically. So very, very pleased with the effort from the players. You know, a lot of positives to come out of it. I thought Levy was very, very good. Was it Levi? Levy. We'll go Levy. So yeah, I mean, moving forward, you'd expect to see some of those in and around the fringe of the squad and potentially, all being well, start to break into the first team towards the middle to the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's the third year. I think the last three teams to knock us out of the Carabao Cup were Swansea, Luton and Swansea, wasn't it? Which just shows that I don't blame the fans for being underwhelmed by the draw, particularly as away fans were a thing again for it. So it's in the history books and that's where it's going to remain. We'll move on to the mailbag now. Before, we usually hear from Velka Panovic at this moment, but you know what? I'm going to give it to Femi Azeez, the debutant, a home debutant goal scorer. So let's hear from him as he talks about his big day at the Select Car Leasing Stadium, and then we'll go into mailbag to hear what you think.
Yes, very special. Couldn't ask for more, really. Words really can't describe how it feels scoring my first goal at home in the first game of the season in front of the great fans. I couldn't really ask for more. Well, I've been told to get at the back post a lot of the times, and today I threw myself in the back post, and yeah, I was lucky that the ball actually ricocheted off the defender and I could score.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Thank you as ever to those sending in their tweets and thoughts for us to answer in the mailbag. A couple questions this week and some good questions as well. Ben Greenwood saying, if Ejaria is fit, does he come straight back into this team? If so, where does he fit in? Azeez got into a lot of promising positions. Seems it would be a little harsh to leave him out. Guess a lot depends on how Zhao is. And that's a good final point from Ben there, because if Zhao isn't fit, Puskas would be the natural option, but should he be the natural option? Is it actually, you know, if Ejaria is fit for Bristol City, and Paunovic has said that they're going to assess this on Monday, if he is fit to start, would you be tempted to put him up front, or Azeez up front, or, you know, work something around that? I don't think you can put John Swift up front, but is there a better way of doing it rather than just automatically saying we have to play with a natural striker? And I suppose my answer to that question is that you probably would have to go with Puskas, because I guess if Ejaria has got a bit of a problem, then it probably is the safe option, at least, to keep him on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be very surprised if Ejaria starts against Bristol City. I really would. But what are we, Sunday now? So game's on Tuesday. very, very surprised if he's able to start the game. If he's able to involve, brilliant. But my answer to that question really would be Aziz would need to go up front, because I'm not sure. I really want to like George Puskas. I think every time I see him, I just want to go, he's going to be a great player. But we're sort of 2 years into that now, and it's just not happened for him. And I really do think that they're looking at trying to get offers for him to move him on. So you'd expect that he would probably start on Tuesday, given the fact that Jao won't be fit for that. However, you know, when Ajaro does come back in, I would like to see Aziz up front and just see what he does up there. I think you're right. I don't think Swift can play up front. Potentially Ajaro. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure that Ajaro has ever played up front, or if he could play up front. He kind of seems to offer more taking players on rather than being more direct. But certainly from what I saw from Aziz, he could potentially fill that spot. But, you know, we've said all along that the biggest thing we need right now is another striker as a backup, because for whatever reason, we can't trust Jao's body at the moment in terms of his fitness levels and him getting injured. So I think moving forward, the club will need to look at that either on a kind of loan basis or emergency loan sort of come sort of October, November time. But we're going to need to get another player in who can play up front and provide backup. But certainly in the short term, I don't think you can leave Ajaro out when he's fit. I really don't.
Well, I suppose if they're all fit, then you probably just revert. We only play two supporters with a striker against Preston. If they're all fit, you play a four-man back, and you can probably have Ajaro, Swift and Aziz with Jao / Puskas, don't you? I suppose that kind of is a pretty straightforward thing, with Aziz probably on the right-hand side and Ajaro on the left, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, if they're all fit, happy days. You know, that we're talking about strength and depth now, and that's a lovely decision to have. But at the moment, we're not quite at that stage, unfortunately. So, yeah, my short answer is I would see Aziz up front in place of Jao on Tuesday and potentially Saturday. That would be my opinion on that. I don't think we've got too many other suitors that can play up front. So I think he's right. I think Ben's right there. I don't think he can really leave out Aziz based on his current form at the moment. But there's going to come a point where as a, what is he, 19, 20-year-old, he's going to need a rest. Got to be conscious of the workload that you're putting on these young players. So there's options there. But the ideal scenario is to have them all fit and you know, giving the manager a real headache rather than sticking him in by default, basically.
Yeah, I'm spending far too much time in my head now trying to think of how I'd play over Ajaro up front. I think maybe a target man role with someone a bit pacey running off him because he can hold up the ball a little bit. I don't know. I feel like this is a...
I think that'd be good to see, though. Like, I think it'd be another string to his bow. You know, one thing he's lacked a little bit is goal. So why not? Let's just see what he does up there if he's fit and ready to go. The only problem with that is, as we've seen from Jao, is he just gets battered by the opposition in terms of physicality. So it's whether or not he can stand up to that. But this, you know, it's a good headache to have, you know, once they're all fit, definitely.
Yeah, it feels like the sort of thing that probably works really well on FIFA, but in real life, maybe not as easily. Simundo the Great, the other question then of this week's podcast, saying, any disappointment at the attendance, seeing as it was the first home league game of the season after a season and no fans? Are we thinking some people are still staying away because they don't feel safe, etc.? Or have we really lost that many fans? Well, I suppose it's in terms of why fans aren't turning up, I suppose it's probably a bit of everything. We've got fans on holiday at the moment. We've got fans fans at weddings and all that sort of stuff, fans of personal commitments. We've got fans who maybe haven't been able to decide whether they're getting a ticket yet or not. I suppose it is a bit of everything. And fans obviously not feeling safe. I was actually talking to one of the guys yesterday. I was saying, actually, maybe there were hundreds of fans per club who are either not with us anymore. You know, we had a round of applause for those who aren't with us anymore at the game on Saturday during the first half, which was nice to have. And then, you know, maybe those who don't have their family member with them anymore, who they would go to, and maybe they think, I'm not going to go on my own because I haven't got X, Y, Z sadly with me anymore. So that has an impact. And yeah, those who don't feel safe, maybe we'll never see some of those people back, or it'll be a year or whatever. So I think there's a multitude of reasons. But in terms of disappointment, as Simundo asked about, Reading had 12,165 there against Preston. The last full season, obviously this is a couple of years ago now, but the 18-19 average attendance was 14,991. So that's a loss of about 3,000 fans. Now, the same parameters comparison, Bristol City lost about 3,000 fans, Swansea lost about 2,000 fans, Blackburn have lost about 4,000 fans, and Millwall about 1,000 fans. So every club basically in the Championship that can be compared for this Saturday game to the 18-19 game, obviously there's away fans and all sorts that make difference in those numbers, but it's across the board. And for me, yeah, we want a full house and everything like that every week, but disappointment, I suppose it's just the way of the world at the moment that we're not able to have as many fans back in.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what the players made of it, because, you know, I don't know what their expectation was in terms of getting people through the door. You know, they've always said that it helps when there's more people in the stadium making more noise. But honestly, I thought the atmosphere was first class yesterday. I really did.
Club
18-71 are kind of back in it. And, you know, the people that have set that up are kind of coming from the right place, really. And the bulk of the people that attend that part of the ground are really positive, and they do add to it. But, you know, generally speaking, it's very difficult how you look at attendances, because people don't want to go. They're not going to go. It doesn't matter if they're nervous about COVID, although I have to say yesterday I thought it was very well run by the club in terms of making people feel safe and so on.
Yeah, if I can quickly jump in, I would say that having only one bar open in the East Stand felt a little counterintuitive, although luckily that's what we're going to be.
There was only one in the Dolan, but there was only one in the East Stand, was there?
Yeah, which, well just
meant... probably wasn't the best thing then, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was for COVID, or it was for COVID, that's what they said. But it just meant that everyone congregated around it. And then it was a bit weird, but I know they've said that that's only for Preston and Bristol City. So, you know, maybe there is another reason for that. But yeah, otherwise, I would agree with you that everything seemed to go pretty much without a hitch.
I mean, I think obviously there was, I've been sitting without contradicting myself, there's obviously the debacle with the season tickets, which didn't personally affect me. But I know that was kind of responded to by the club. And when I got there at sort of 1:15, there wasn't huge queues outside the ticket office. So that was quite positive. But I mean, we could do a whole podcast on the match day experience at the moment. I sort of touched on it on the article that I wrote yesterday. But, you know, on the whole, with us as a club, we've probably got, 6,000-7,000 season ticket holders this season. So there'd always be that core of people that would go regardless, any weather, any opposition, any league, really. I think you're right about the time of year as well. But, you know, it's not, all due respect to Preston, it's not high on people's wish list to go and watch them play football. So that might have had something to do with it as well. Don't know. I mean, I think there'll be a few more on Tuesday night, because obviously you'd expect Bristol to sell out there and being local rivals or local to us anyway.
I'm not sure they will. It's on general sale for Bristol City, and this is what I mean.
Is it?
Their allocation, their 2,200 they have, and they put it on general sale, which suggests, I mean, they're bringing 1,500, you'd imagine, but selling out, I think that's the sort of thing that we don't see anymore. Maybe it's the Championship, maybe it isn't pandemic related, but those are the sort of things. And Preston, I mean, I've seen Preston bring more than that, and that was about 300 fans that Preston bought. So
yeah, they were quite sparse, weren't they, down there yesterday?
Yeah, but no, I suppose it's that sort of thing, isn't it, that ultimately, you know, we don't actually know fully why it wasn't 15,000 or 18,000. We could obviously say that the team not being brilliant for the last few years is a point, but then last season was our best season in ages. So that kind of mitigates that a little bit. It's difficult. But ultimately, I think, hopefully, as you're right, we should, if Bristol City bring another 1,000 compared to Preston, then that should mean that that Tuesday's attendance grows. And hopefully it continually grows over the course of the season, because tell you what, the club need the money. So if you're thinking of getting down the Mad Stand or the SCLS, then definitely do it. With that then, the mailbag, always send in your Facebook and Twitter questions to us, and the Tarlesend @gmail.com. Send those in as well. We'll read them out and answer them. Thank you to all those who give us something to talk about and shine a light on something that maybe we hadn't thought of ourselves. So with that in mind, let's go into the news bites and discuss what's been going on in the transfer window this week.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Well, Veljko Panovic has already said that he's not expecting anything pre-Bristol City in terms of what Reading can do for bringing players in. We have bought a player in, though, however. Tom Delibashiru has joined from Watford on loan. There's a player who was at Manchester City for much of his youth career, went to Watford on a six-year deal, so they obviously rated him. And then after it hit in basically what was touted as his main breakthrough season, a.k.a. Last season, when Watford played Reading early in the season, he did his ACL, I think it was. So his serious knee injury ruled him out for the whole season. And now he is back. And now we get to find out whether Reading have got the player who is touted as a big prospect for Watford, or alternatively is a player who's had an injury kind of sadly be of massive detriment to his abilities, or maybe something in between. But I think ultimately, Ben, seeing this, he can play across the midfield. He can probably fill in kind of the attacking midfield spots as well. Generally, just seems like a good man to have in.
Yeah, I think from what I can read from Watford fans and the comments that they put, he's clearly going out on loan because he needs to recover and get some game time. And he's not going to do that in the Premier League, which is fair enough. I was a little bit surprised at the position that he plays, because I would have thought they would have been sort of chomping at the bit to try and get a left back and a striker. And I don't obviously want to be greedy, because a player's a player, and I think we know we need the bodies in. he seems to fit the profile of what Panovic wants in terms of personality. You know, he talked about him being, quite honest in his play, giving his best at all times, and kind of overcoming, the injury that he's had, which, as we know, it can be quite a serious injury for a lot of players. So I think all in all, it's a positive one. I'm a little bit surprised he didn't play as well yesterday, or at least get on for 5 minutes, just to give him that taste of what it's like. I think it's always good to kind of bed the new players in that way. But, he's part of the squad. He's clearly integrated. He's been training a little bit this week. So we'll see what comes of it. The fact he's on loan for the season, hopefully for the season, unless they recall him, is a positive, because it means we know we've got that player, a little bit like Estevez last year. we need the bodies in, and he seems to fit what Panovic wants to do with the team. As I said, Watford fans speak very highly of him, so I'm hoping for good contribution from him.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to see him come on for the end of the Preston game, take Aziz or someone off, and I don't really feel like it was the right decision that he didn't, but there we go. Yuri Ribeiro is the other player that's been linked to the Nottingham Forest left-back, who also reassuringly, just in case, after signing Pelé and Alpha Semedo, if you were worried that this former Nottingham Forest player hadn't played for Benfica, then rest assured he has. So there's another man off that sort of weird conveyor belt that we seem to be going for a little bit recently. But a left back, Championship experience. Looks like he left Forest at the end of last season. He's a free agent. He left because he found it very difficult in England during the pandemic, and hopefully that is a problem that's now been solved in terms of him seeing his family and everything, but also just kind of wanted a new challenge. And I think Forest had kind of moved on, not necessarily a decision that all their fans agreed with as well. So if this happens, and it's kind of been suggested that it's in the works at the very least, then it'd be, I think, a good addition. We need a left back, certainly. I don't particularly want McIntyre there for the whole season, and Bristow, it's risky, certainly playing him there the whole season. So, if he does come off, then I'd be happy to have someone with Championship experience, and hopefully he's someone we can afford.
Yeah, I think it'd be really good business by the club. Obviously, it'd be interesting to see what kind of length of contract they give him. Obviously, he would be a permanent signing, wouldn't be coming in on loan, which I think would be positive as well. I always prefer permanent signings to loan signings. But I think he's going to find it very difficult to turn down the riches that Berkshire has to offer. I know he's obviously homesick in Nottingham, but that's Nottingham, isn't it? He's not been to Berkshire full-time yet, so I think he'll settle and find it. I think if he's available and they can do it, then yeah, they have to do it. And I'm not sure that there's any other left-backs in the offing at the moment. Once he's in, then they can concentrate on trying to get someone up front, and I think that will probably be it. I don't see a deluge of players coming in between now and August. So I think sort of 3-4 absolute maximum will be what we'll get, and that's what we'll have to work with until the emergency loan window opens, if he feels that he needs to do something in that department. So yeah, if it can be done, brilliant. I would welcome that, just as a kind of reassurance. I'm not sure why it's dragged on so long, really. I guess it's kind of personal issues or personal bits in the contract. So we'll see what happens with that one.
Yeah, there's always the potential for the EFL to kind of get involved. And this is one of the things, actually, that when it comes to our earlier discussion about selling Swift and Lauren, even if we could bring someone in, or if there was, you know, I don't fully trust the EFL to be able to swiftly let us, you know, but no pun intended, get men in. If we did have, you know, let's say 2 million quid to spend on an attacking mid on deadline day, I would kind of worry that we've missed the boat because of the bureaucracy that would effectively be involved in it. And maybe that's what's holding up Ribeiro. But as long as it's in before the deadline, we've got a couple of weeks left, then all good. I think the only other thing to discuss is more on Nottingham Forest is and your gleaming review of Nottingham a minute ago maybe helped putting him off this move. But Tom Holmes, apparently a bid of about £1 million landing in from Nottingham Forest in the last couple of days, apparently. Bit of an interesting one that they've gone for him. I suppose age and various other factors, probably contract as well, they're looking at. But is there a time, is there worry that we lose a player like this? It's not certainly not one of the players we talked about losing, but you know, the club might be tempted if someone offers maybe you have to double it, get to 3-4 million sort of level for Tom Holmes. The club might be tempted to think, you know what, he's not actually in the starting 11 at the moment. Maybe it's actually the sort of deal they'll contemplate.
I think with Forest at the moment, they are, you know, and I don't want people to think I've got anything against them or as the place, because I haven't. It's a great place to go. But what I would say is that I don't think they really know what they're doing at the moment. Obviously, they haven't had a great start to the season at all. I think Hughton's already under pressure personally, which is a shame, because I think he's an excellent manager. And I think they're just scattergunning their approach in terms of trying to get bodies in, like they've done previously, and just getting the numbers through the door and see what happens. I don't think that they are realistically interested in Holmes, not for a million. I think it was a really derogatory bid, both to us as a club, but also to Holmes as a player. I personally would be disappointed if he went. I think he's got, you know, obviously big attachments to this area, and I think he's got a big future, certainly with us at the club moving forward. But, you know, in terms of his preferred position as right back, unless Yeardon gets injured again, he's not going to get in. And unless he can be a little bit more versatile in terms of moving across the back four, he's not going to get a game based on that starting 11. So I think all parties would have to weigh it up, particularly if the money side of it was upped in terms of the offer. But again, I just don't think we can afford to lose kind of players of his personality and his quality when he does play. So, you know, I hope they just back off that one, really. And obviously we talked about Loren at the start of the podcast, but they're going to have to do a real sensible offer to be able to get him in. And I'm not sure, as a prospective player, unless you get a huge hike in wages, why you currently move there at the moment, because I think they're going to find it hard to get going this season, personally.
Yeah, fair point on that as well. Certainly, if you agree to join Forest and they don't get promoted within the next couple of years, then you kind of, you know, that's not exactly any better than being at Reading or maybe leaving as a free agent at the end of the year. Let's tick off their news bites with the other clubs or the other teams around Reading Football Club. Women not in action. I think it's the 3rd of September on Sky Sports. They're away to Man United for the start of their WSL season. The under-23s kick off tomorrow, i.e. Monday, against Newcastle. And the under-18s are underway with a 3-1 defeat to West Ham in their opening game season. They next got Fulham in a week's time. It was a Sonny Perkins hat-trick for the Hammers that sank the Royals on Saturday. So, Tuesday night, 8 p.m. at the Medeski. I think there's been a little bit of confusion that this was on Wednesday night, but it's definitely Tuesday night. It's definitely 8 p.m. It's definitely at the Select Car Leasing Stadium, unlike what I said 10 seconds ago. Let's get into Big Match Preview and Bristol City.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the Big Match Preview.
Well, we've got a really good fixture list to start off the season if past results are anything to go by, because we've got Bristol City on Tuesday. They've had a draw at home to Blackpool, a last-minute equaliser for Blackpool as well, so nice and demoralising for Bristol City, and a defeat to Middlesbrough to kick off their campaign. So there's already a nice little bit of malaise there for Reading to get into, Ben. And really, just looking at what Bristol City have done this year, and I know a couple of Bristol City fans, and they're not best pleased with the situation they've been in with Nigel Pearson as the manager, and he's basically just brought in some old hands, you know, King and Dan James, and I think a player from OH Leuven as well. So he's not necessarily had the best of times to start the season down at Bristol City. And really, for Reading on a Tuesday night, it's a good chance to pile on the misery.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like Pearson at all. I've always found him very, very arrogant. And I think the way that he comes across with his players and other people sort of, you know, there was that bizarre incident years ago when he was at Leicester about the with the local press guy and just generally being really unpleasant. So I don't see Bristol having a particularly good season. I think he potentially would be one of the first managers to go in terms of their squad. There's nothing there really that concerns me for Tuesday night. I mean, obviously they've got Chris Martin, who will inevitably score or do something because he's played for us, and that always seems to be the case. Andy King, I've always liked his player. I think he scored yesterday, didn't he? So, he's a good player and one to potentially look out for. But you're right with the Malays. I think it's been going on for a couple of seasons with them. They just seem to have the same players, same sort of turnover, same sort of expectations. And, you know, they flirted, didn't they, for a little while with promotions to the Premier League. They got to the playoff final a few years back. But other than that, they've just been kind of mingling and just kind of lingering around the mid-table spots, really. In terms of us, it's a really good game to have. Same yesterday, really, in terms of playing Preston after their awful first day defeat. I think with the run that Bristol are currently on, it's a good game for us to have. And I think we will have enough to be able to win. I don't think we'll have it all our own way, a little bit like yesterday, but I think we've got enough in that starting 11 to get the 3 points off Bristol tomorrow, Tuesday even.
Yeah, I do think that Bristol City, they're the kind of club, I mean, we're obviously can't really talk too much, but the kind of club who do have they'll start the season well, or they'll get, you know, 5 wins out of 6 or something, and there's a bit of hope. And then, you know, last season in particular, the floor just dropped out of them, and I think they went on an awful run, and Reading capitalised on that with a Michael Morrison chip, just to emphasise that amidst it. So that's how it is. But ultimately, you know, this is the Championship. 2 games in and no team has won both of their opening 2 games, which I think is a really good insight into just a snippet into how competitive this league is. 2 teams have lost both their games, if you're interested, though, Forest and Preston. So for Reading, I think it is just a case of approach this game more or less how we did the Preston game, create the same sort of chances, move the ball around quite well. And if the idea that Reading can have 2 wins out of 3 to start the season, I think that'd be really useful. Just looking at some of the stats now, Reading have won 7 of their last 9 home games against Bristol City. It is a team, actually, that we like playing. Bristol City have lost 10 of their last 15 league matches against us. We did the double over them last season. So in terms of predictions then, you'll be very pleased to hear that yourself, Westy and Ollie all got 2-1s for Preston. So you've moved forward into into position with that. Handbag.
Is that 4 points?
Yeah. So yourself and Ollie on leading on 4 points at the moment. Handbag, Sim and Adam all took a point. And we usually have a bit of a curse, don't we, of us all predicting wins and then Reading failing to win at home. So valiantly, I predicted 1-1 and have taken the bullet. So you're welcome in that regard.
You're putting the club before you, and that's what we need to do in this current climate. So, you know, that's the main thing.
It is the selflessness that this era needs, I think. Not all heroes wear capes, but some of us run podcasts. So predictions then for Bristol City. What are you going to say for this one?
I'm definitely going for a win for us. I'll go 1-0 Reading.
Here's a stat. None of Bristol City's last 15 league games on a Tuesday have finished in a draw. So okay, I'm going to go for another 2-1. 2-1 Reading, I'll say, for this one, which I think, you know, we don't have to necessarily put in brilliant performances at the moment. I'd say the performance was better than the result against Preston, but just again, just up in the confidence levels, wouldn't it? Just keep ticking us over.
And there's no reason for us to not go into Tuesday night and not be confident. There might have been a little bit of hesitation, as I said, having lost the first 2 games of the season as a club. But, you know, in terms of going to the Preston game yesterday, but Tuesday, I mean, just go for it. You know, you got the fans are behind, you know, back behind the team for a bit. You know, Panovic is to my mind making the right decisions and is reasonably well liked by the fan base, which is a real positive. And just go in and you know, get another 3 points, and that will take us nicely into Saturday, which, you know, again is another on paper, another winnable game. So, you know, the run of games they got coming up is really positive for them, and they've got to get the points on the board early. And as you said, it doesn't matter about the performance as long as they get that win at the end of the game.
Yeah, Coventry away on Saturday at 3 p.m. We'll be back after that game with the next edition of the Tyne Lowestown podcast. Thank you everyone for listening. It's always a pleasure to have people drop by and hear our thoughts on the club and to keep things keep things interesting this time of year to find out how the club is doing and everything like that, and the mailbag questions and everything. So thank you as ever for that. Thank you, Ben, for dropping in.
Absolutely no problem at all. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, chaps, and see you next week.
Absolutely. We'll be back in a week's time, and hopefully Reading will be continuing to show that far from the doom and gloom of the financial sheets and the transfer window that we may be feeling, there is actually a very decent team still left in Berkshire, and it is moving through the gears and starting to put some points on the board. Here's to six more this week. Wouldn't that be brilliant? We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. Come on, you ass. Yes.